Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I have an important show, one again that I think is very timely since we're living in some challenging times. And every time you read something or turn on the TV or interact with people, it seems like there's a different frame of reference that you have to know about. And we've been moving, in my opinion, towards away from democracy, towards socialism, totalitarianism, you name it. And I think it's time again that we revisit this, because it's not something that we don't have a facility with it. You have to actually do the work to figure out, I believe, what's going on. And today we have someone who's done that and who has created a website called stoppingsocialism.com. He's also a contributor to many national outlets, including the Washington Examiner, Newsweek, The Hill, Town Hall. He's a widely published writer, a political commentator, and the editor, director, and research fellow at the Heartland Institute, a national free market think tank. Mr. Justin Haskins also runs Heartland Socialism Research Center. And as I mentioned before, he's the editor-in-chief of StoppingSocialism.com. He's written a book, which is an Amazon bestseller, called Socialism is Evil, The Moral Case Against Marx's Radical Dream. And I wanted to have him come on to give us another perspective and someone who can speak without a lot of heat and light, but with actual knowledge about where we're going, because it seems to me, Mr. Haskins, like we're on a slippery slope.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on. We absolutely are on a slippery slope. And the main reason for that, I believe, is because of ignorance and because of prosperity. And what I mean by that is younger people are the demographic. When we've done polling on this, when other organizations have done polling on this, younger people are the demographic most likely to say that they have a favorable view of socialism. Sometimes it's as much as 50% of young voters say that they support socialism. The reason for that is because many young people, myself included, frankly, don't remember the Soviet Union. And we didn't live through Mao Zedong's China. And we didn't live through the Vietnam War. And we don't remember what communism and socialism, what that did to the world on a really horrific scale. These are figures in history books from faraway places, and it doesn't feel real to most of these people. They don't know the history and they don't feel it. So they're very ignorant of all the things that have happened in history. And I think that that's a major part of it. The other thing is prosperity. We've been so successful in the United States since the fall of the Soviet Union, since the 1980s especially. We've been so successful in the United States that we've forgotten, I think, to some degree, what has made us successful. We just take it sort of for granted. And we think, well, you know, we can have another big social program. We can redistribute wealth. We've got so much wealth already. Why don't we just provide it to people, give it to people? Why don't we have government-run healthcare? Why don't we have all these different policies? And you know, the world would be a much better place if we just started going down the road of socialism a little bit. We don't have to go all the way down the road necessarily, but we can just go down a little bit here and there. And before you know it, you have a full-blown authoritarian society when you do that over a long enough period of time. We're not there yet, of course, but we are absolutely on the road headed there because younger people are not afraid of socialism, because frankly, younger people are spoiled and don't know the history of it. Younger people tend to be very entitled, and I'm a younger person, so I feel qualified to say this, and they don't really understand that free markets and capitalism and individual liberty is the reason why they have all of the wealth and all of the educational opportunities that they do, and iPhones and the technology and the high quality healthcare system. They don't understand that because they haven't been taught it, and that's deliberate. And as a result of that, we are headed towards socialism. That's very dangerous.
Well, you know, you say something it's cognitive, you know, to me is cognitive dissonance in a way, where well off and we're doing well from, you know, economic standpoint, but yet we still have a poverty consciousness. So these children that you describe, young people with the iPhones, with the tech out the yin yang, still see themselves as perpetual victims. It's kind of strange. How does that, is it, and as you said, I think the education system has gone a long way to, I think, breaking the system, since you don't know what good is. You don't understand where you came from, so you can't understand where you're going. But how do you become entitled and a victim at the same time? It just doesn't quite make sense to me. And I see this all the time. You're right. These college kids, and they are the 1% in these private colleges where most people can't afford to go or go at all. And they're sitting there talking about how awful they have it. It's just, I mean, how do we break this trance that we're in?
Right. I mean, there is, not only are many people who are in these sort of academic circles and the professional circles, the lawyers, the doctors of the world, not only are they the 1% of today, they are the 0.0001% of the history of human civilization. I mean, people today in America are, especially people who have money, are living better than human beings have ever lived. Kings and queens lived 1,000 years ago, infinitely better than these people ever lived. They have no idea how good they have it because they don't understand history. The reason why they don't understand history and the reason why they are entitled and they feel as though they are victims and that everyone in the universe, essentially, except for white men, are victims too, is because that's what they're repeatedly told. From the moment they enter public schools, when they're in kindergarten and first grade, all the way until especially the time they get older and they're in college, they are told that the entire history of Western civilization is marred by a horrific, racist, bigoted, biased, awful, selfish, greedy group of people, most of whom were white men, who discriminated and hated their way to the top and who used their power to hold other people down. And that's the history of America, and that's the history of Western civilization. And only when we break free from the shackles of all of these traditional ideas, institutions, social mores, ideas about literally every part of life, only when we destroy all of those things can we be free from that tyrannical system. And of course, the reason that they're able to convince people of this is not only because the left controls overwhelmingly the education system from K through 12 into college, but also because there is a little bit of truth to it, right? I mean, there's no doubt about it that there are examples of people at various times in history being racist and bigoted and mistreating people and using their power against others. And so they take these examples and they say, see, look, this is what I'm talking about. America is actually not a great place. And they ignore all of the incredible gains that we've made over this period of time, including on civil liberties. Right now, people are freer than they have in terms of civil rights. They're freer than they have literally ever been in the history of human civilization. And yet people feel more victimized today than they did 30 years ago. That makes no sense. The only reason we have this this sentiment, this feeling, this widespread feeling, is because of, you know, indoctrination. I mean, it sounds strong to call it that, but that's really what it is. When you are repeatedly convincing people of something that is factually not true, I don't know what else you can say other than say that it is a form of indoctrination. And that's exactly what's going on in our education.
I think that's a perfect place to take our first break, because I think that sets the table for the rest of our conversation. So let's come back and pick that up, come back to Living in a Solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Justin Haskins. He is the editor-in-chief of StoppingSocialism.com. And before the break, you were giving us, I think, a very good baseline for how we got here. From cradle to grave, almost, people are getting the same mantra, whether that's school, the media, pressures from Twitter, etc. And there's censorship going on. So either you go along and you're part of the in crowd, or there's a stick to this, where someone's going to come after you, take your livelihood, take your freedom, take your sense of peace, in order for you to cower and to go along with the system. Socialism isn't what it's cracked up to be. They seem to have this very romantic vision of everybody living well and everybody being middle class and above, and there is no poverty and everybody's living milk and honey in the land of milk and honey. That is not what socialism is to me. And everything I've read, and I've, God, thank God, never lived through, but there's people who do very well and there's the rest of the society. And those people are the intelligentsia, the academics, the people who basically live off of the sweat and equity of other people.
Yeah, that's 100% right. Socialism is the worst idea that humanity has ever come up with. Truly, it's one of the worst. If it's not the worst idea, it's got to be in the top three. It is a truly horrific idea. And that's not an opinion. That's a historical fact. If you just look at socialist societies that have existed throughout the course of human history, it doesn't matter on which continent it's been tried. And it's been tried in Africa, in places like Angola. It's been tried all throughout Europe, obviously. It was tried in Russia and in communist China. It's been tried in the Americas. And everywhere it's ever been tried, it has, to varying degrees, resulted in poverty, destruction, a loss of civil liberties, at the very least, oftentimes mass murder and people being tortured and exiled. Socialist and communist parties in the 20th century alone murdered, exiled, or imprisoned more than 167 million people throughout the world, with all sorts of different languages, all sorts of different religions, all kinds of different backgrounds and historical contexts, with various forms of technologies and economies. It didn't matter. Whenever people went full-born into socialism and or communism, they ended up with people being victims of tyranny. So why do people believe that this idea could actually work? Well, the vast majority of people who call themselves socialists today are actually not socialists. What they believe is they want big social welfare programs that will serve as a quasi-safety net, because they've been told that this is the only way that we can, for example, make sure everyone has healthcare. We can only make sure everyone has access to healthcare if the government runs it. And so they think to themselves, well, I want to help poor people. I want to help people who don't have access to health insurance. So I guess I have to support Medicare for all or something like that. It's a profound misunderstanding. When you actually start talking to them about the details of it, most people who call themselves socialists don't really believe in the truest of socialism in its truest sense. They don't believe in the collective property, the collective ownership and management of property. Most property in society, or nearly all property in society, they just believe in big social safety nets. And of course, you can have reasonable debates about what kind of social nets, safety nets we should have in society and to what extent we should have them and how they should work and all of that. I believe that social safety nets, when properly used and properly designed, can be a good thing in certain aspects. And when you're talking about people who are severely handicapped, for example, and don't have any money, you know, you need to have stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what socialism is. And that's not what the socialists who are in government and the people who take it very seriously believe. When Bernie Sanders talks about socialism, he really believes in it. He's not one of these people that only wants single-payer health care, and then if he got that, he would just go home and you know, give up being in Congress. He wants socialism in its truest sense. And the same is true with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and with Ilhan Omar and a bunch of other people who are in government and who are in influential places in media and in academia. They really, truly believe that if we know that it hasn't worked in the past, but if we could just tweak it a little bit and make it less authoritarian than it was before, that we can design it, we can make it better, we can put the right people in charge, we can make things different than it was before. That's what everyone who's ever believed in socialism thought. It never works out that way, because socialism is totally in opposition to basic a basic understanding of human nature. And as a result of that a failure, to be able to properly take into account how human beings really are, socialism will always fail no matter who the people are running it, no matter how smart they are, no matter how well they design the system. And if people just understood the history of that, they would know that it can't possibly work. But because they don't understand the history, they continue to buy this lie that it is possible to design socialism in a way that will be effective.
You know, the one thing that you say that I think underpins all of these people is that they're not on the front line doing whatever they're so-called, you know, they're smart about. They're not doctors. They're not private practitioners. They're not people who get their hands dirty and have to get up every day and make a payroll. These are not the people who understand that. These are ivory tower academics. And I think some of them are just, you know, faces of, fronts for keeping the status quo while they have a great rhetoric about it. But they're always taking from someone who is doing the work and taking it from someone and giving it to somebody else. That inherently to me is unfair. If someone gets up and works 16 hours a day to build whatever the love of their existence is, and someone swoops in and taxes them out of out of their business or regulates them into oblivion, you're right. That is not human nature. You work for something, you want to enjoy the fruits of your labor. Someone is telling you you're not worthy or whatever you're doing is, they're putting a value on it arbitrarily, aren't they?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's fundamentally one of the problems with socialism from a moral perspective. Even if socialism could theoretically work in a practical way, even if you could design socialist programs so that they resulted in people being healthier and wealthier and society being better, even if you could do that, there's still severe moral limitations to socialism that you really can't get over. And one of them is it requires essentially the widespread taking of people's property, and then the collective use of that property and the collective management of that property in a world where people don't all have one monolithic way of understanding the world. For example, in a socialized society where you have socialized medicine, what do you do about abortion? What do you do about contraception when all by the collective, meaning by literally everyone, when all of the doctors are being paid by literally everyone, when you have widespread collective ownership and management of these things, then what happens if you are a religious objector to that? What happens if you just, for moral reasons, don't think these things are good? It doesn't matter.
No.
You have to participate in it. You have to be a part owner of the abortion clinic, even if you think abortion is totally against your religious beliefs. These kinds of moral problems that are inherent in socialism that you can't get over, I think make it fundamentally impossible to have a socialized economy, a socialized society that is both effective and moral. It can't be morally good because not everyone agrees on really important issues. And as a result of that, you're going to force people, at least some people in society, usually a minority of people, to live in a way that they are fundamentally, completely opposed to.
I think you can expand that. It's not that you can go the coercion side of it, where people, I think, let's just face it, we're all different. So let's say a majority of us don't go along, but there's people who will acquiesce for the peace because they're afraid, because of anxiety, whatever. They're being led down a path. It's not because they choose to do it either. So you have the people who will go along and get along, yet they're not for it either. So this system is rife with top-down control. It'll legislate out any freedom of thought, any objection, because this system can't hold together because of people coming together by free association. It's always by coercion. That's never going to last.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that the sort of the best evidence for that point that you just made being 100% true without dispute is that we actually have a society right now. We are living in a society right now where anybody can become a communist or a socialist. All they have to do is get together with a bunch of other people and go get a piece of property somewhere and go live in a commune. You can make your own commune right now if you really want to. And yet, no one does that. Almost no one. Almost no one makes a commune and goes and lives in it, right? Almost no one voluntarily chooses, not even the people who call themselves socialists, not even the face of socialism, like Bernie Sanders, who has multiple houses and millions of dollars. He doesn't do that. Why? Because at the end of the day, their system, they're real at the core. They know their system requires coercion. It requires forcing everybody to go along with it in order to have the world that they really want. They don't just want to live on their own in a collective society. They could do that tomorrow. They want to force their neighbors to go along with it too. And that's, again, fundamentally a significant moral problem with socialism. It isn't really about freedom at all in any way. It's about coercion at its core.
I think that's well said. And it's not like they want to live with the other people. They seem, like you said, these are independently wealthy people who started off, most of them, with nothing, you know, who were basically living hand to mouth. As I remember reading about Bernie Sanders before he became a senator. And now they're multimillionaires, books, multiple compounds. So while they're telling you you shouldn't want to live well, and it's you're taking away from somebody else, it's like they're doing the same thing, but using rhetoric and media and all sorts of gimmicks to make you look at the shiny thing while they're doing exactly what they say is wrong with our country and society.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, we could point to the numerous houses, and we could point to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wearing dresses that are worth $20,000 going to the Met Gala and doing things like that. There are plenty of examples of socialists in America being hypocrites, but even in societies where they've fully adopted socialist or they've tried to fully adopt communist principles, no one has ever actually had a communist society in the truest sense. Whenever they try this, what do you end up with? You end up with a class of people who have all the money, have all the wealth, have all the power, and most people in society have whatever the ruling class decides to give them. Socialism inevitably, no matter how good the intentions are of most of the people who start out with it, socialism always devolves into some form of authoritarianism, which always leads to having a two-class system, the people with power and the people without power. And there's really no way around that. If there were, then I think someone would have figured it out by now. But there really is no way around it, again, because it's fundamentally incoherent, the system, when you're dealing with human beings who have radically different ways of thinking, who have radically different desires, in a really complicated economic and social world that we live in today and throughout the course of human history. It's just impossible to make socialism and communism work without force and coercion. And that's why it always devolves into that.
I think that's, again, a wonderful place to take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Justin Haskins. And again, he's an author, writer, editor, and we're speaking about his book, Socialism is Evil and the Moral Case Against Marxist Radical Dream. And, you know, before the break, we were talking a lot about why this system won't work, but let's bring it now into real time. There's been a lot of talk about the Great Reset. There's been a lot of looking at it from 1,000 feet. This whole situation where we've had a breaking of our society, where people who are small business owners, independent practitioners, people who are running their own lives, have basically been put on the sideline. And you've seen the wealth transfer from the individual to the corporation. And there's a process that I'm really becoming very aware of, public-private partnership. Every time I hear that word, it makes my hair stand on end, because to me, that is what fascism is. And it's this ruling class cloaked with corporatism. And we've seen in healthcare. And I think it's a template that's going on through every single aspect of our society, where the government and the corporate interests are aligned and they're working against the individual. How do you see that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that, you know, what the Great Reset fundamentally is all about is it's about the ruling class consolidating their wealth, consolidating their power. And I think to some degree, they believe that this consolidation of wealth and power is for the betterment of all of society. We're all going to be better off if they have more power and control over our lives, because they're the ones who can fight climate change. And they're the ones who can make sure that we don't have wealth inequality, and they can solve all of society's ills if we just give them increasingly more power. Of course, they get richer and richer in the process, and they're the ones that get to make decisions. So it just so happens to work out really well for them. It's very convenient. But I think you're absolutely right that what we're seeing in the world today is a movement of consolidation of power and wealth, and corporations who have historically been for, you know, lower taxes and less regulations and things like that, have figured out that if they go into bed with government really, really hard, because there's always been some degree of cronyism, but if they go into bed with government very, very hard, and they get access to all of this, these trillions of dollars that are being printed by the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world, and they get these ESG scores, environmental, social, and governance scores, which are a new system for evaluating businesses that looks at woke causes and evaluates businesses based on how, essentially how woke they are, you know, what your gender representation of your board of directors is, how committed are you to battling climate change, what's the racial composition of your workforce and your management training programs and things of that nature. When they, all of these systems are designed to supposedly make the world a better place, but it also consolidates power. And corporations realize that if they go into bed with government and they get involved in all of these things, that they're going to get really, really rich in the process. And they don't care what that means for the rest of us. They will sell us all out if it means making more money. And that's exactly what these people have done. And it is very terrifying, because the Constitution of the United States and other systems that have been put into place to protect our civil liberties, they weren't designed to protect us from corporations. They were designed to protect us from government. Well, what happens when corporations and public-private partnerships develop, where you have corporations and governments are so closely aligned, it's hard to tell where one starts and the other ends, right? How do you do that? You don't have the same kind of protections anymore. And I think that's exactly why the left has tried so hard to get into bed with corporations, when in the past they've been completely opposed to them. I think it's because they realize they can get around some of these protections for civil liberties by getting corporations to do their dirty work for them.
Very interesting. I mean, and from the, you know, the argument is always has been, oh, it's bigger is better, it's going to be cheaper and more value. But if the healthcare system is any example of that, it is the absolute opposite. It's more expensive, it's hard to access, it's not about innovation, it's about following top-down mandates, which really in at this point are not helping people, but may actually be harming them. And just template that across to food, to your livelihood. I mean, look at the folks who are working for corporations. If they don't toe the line, they're getting fired. And they don't have recourse. Where in a small business, where you know each other, where there is camaraderie, where there's a sense of everybody has value, for real value, there's a different mindset. It just seems like you've just become a drone, a template, a means to an end, and grist for the mill. And while that's really happening, they're trying to I think, lull you into thinking that you're morally superior. Because you have woke causes, it's very superficial. But for me, the whole woke...
It is.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it is very superficial. It's incredibly superficial. I don't believe that many of these corporate leaders actually are little, you know, AOCs and Bernie Sanders now all of a sudden. I don't think that they believe that at all. They're doing whatever they have to do to be in government's good graces, because they're benefiting immensely from these arrangements. Mm-hmm. And it's not just them, it's also people on Wall Street, it's banks and financial institutions, it's investors like BlackRock and others. They're all making collectively trillions and trillions of dollars, trillions with a T, from these kinds of cronyist arrangements. And government, of course, benefits from this, because these corporations will do the bidding of the left, and they don't have to worry about lawsuits and things like that, and fights over civil liberties and elections and all the rest. So these The ruling class is growing in power, and I think what the right needs to learn, and I think they are starting to learn it, is that decentralizing power is always a good thing. And I think in the past, what the right has had a tendency to do at times, at least in America, is look the other way as corporations became increasingly more powerful, because after all, they're just private businesses. right?
Yeah.
But the truth is that corporations are creations of government themselves, because they have special laws that create them. They have special legal protections, limited liability, and things like that. They pay a different tax rate. They are able to buy health insurance for their employees across state lines. They have all kinds of benefits and advantages that are created by government that they ordinarily wouldn't have. And so it's not really a free market. These gigantic corporations are operating in heavily regulated spaces. They're heavily dependent on the central banking system and getting access to cheap capital. They are quasi-government entities, and smaller businesses, for the most part, are not. And that's why we need more decentralization across the board. It will always lead to greater freedom in society. And I think the right is learning that. I think it's a painful lesson that we're learning. But private business, just because you're non-government officially, doesn't mean that you're not in bed with government, doesn't mean you're not dependent on government, and doesn't mean that you are not in some, to some extent, in coordination with government. And that's something we have to learn, and we have to start designing our policies and our entire movement, really, so that it embraces decentralization of power at every opportunity.
You know, it's always about follow the money. It's part of the mantra of the show, because it seems to apply to everything. This whole structure is based on free money, government-based money, and feeding the trough. So if you look at the top lobbyists, the top 10 are healthcare, probably telecom, you know, the same people who are running these platforms that put their foot on the neck of everybody else to keep themselves in power. It's self-fulfilling, because the people who are writing these legislative fiascos are getting money from these same people. We have to cut the ties. Money should not be the thing that runs this system. And you're right. I think that's the main thing, that it just keeps ginning up money, this cheap money that they keep accessing to make sure that it's a you win, I win, you lose, I win situation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The cheap money thing is so, so important for people to understand, because it doesn't necessarily impact people in a direct way on a day-to-day basis. They don't fully understand it, but the Federal Reserve, at the behest of the national government here in the United States, and the same thing's been going on in Europe, has been printing trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars over the past 20 years, creating it out of thin air. And the vast majority of that money circulates around people in the ruling class. It circulates amongst these big financial institutions, investors, Wall Street, et cetera. It's not filtering down to lower income people and middle income people and working class people. That's not where the money goes. It stays with the people at the top. They lend it to each other. They invest in each other's businesses. Government creates regulations and rules to help these companies continue to get larger and more powerful. And it's a giant cronyist scheme, really, when you think about it. And these trillions of dollars that are being created are making them all far wealthier than they were even just 10 years ago. Companies like BlackRock, for example, one of the largest investment firms in the world, which has had all sorts of ties to government, including the Biden administration, they have trillions more dollars under management today than they did just a few years ago. Trillions of additional dollars in just a couple of years. That doesn't happen without vast amounts of money printing. It's just not possible without that.
It's true. And I think we do suffer because of inflation, because of the fact that they don't have to have any kind of mindfulness of how they treat customers, their employees. They don't care. We're looking at universities who can charge millions of dollars per year for their student body, work against them, basically treat them like cattle. And so what? You know, the only thing that I've noticed now is that the matriculation, I heard, is down, because people finally figured out, why would I want to spend $100,000 to send my child to a school that's going to work against them? So, I mean, it's like they don't care. There's no consequence to their actions, because you're right. I think the money is coming from a different source. And I want to take a break, and I want to ask you, how can we change this? Because ultimately, we have the power. there are more small business owners that employ more workers than the big corporations. You know, if small business goes out of business, that's the economy. It's not these huge corporate entities, you know, these transnational entities that work against our country and everybody else for that matter. So let's think about that. I'd love to get your take on that. So we're going to take our final break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Justin Haskins. And Mr. Haskins, how can people buy your book?
Sure. Well, they can go to Amazon.com and they can find the book there. Just type in Justin Haskins and it will pop right up. Or Socialism is Evil, they can do that as well. And it's available at Barnes & Noble and a bunch of other booksellers too.
Oh, thank you for that. So what's your antidote for this? I mean, we know the problem. We're living it and it seems it's not getting better. But I think people should be able to actually make conscious choices. There are other ways to do it. Create your own, right? Create your own business. How can we get out of this trap that we're being, you know, cajoled into?
Right. Well, I think fundamentally, people, whether they're necessarily conservative or liberal or whatever, because there's a lot of people who are on the left that don't support these kind of cronyist schemes too. Mm-hmm. What they all need to do, what everyone needs to do, is take a step back and say, you know what? I'm not necessarily going to buy from the cheapest global conglomerate, you know, corporation. I'm not necessarily going to bank with the largest bank, the most convenient bank that I can find. Instead, I'm going to make decisions that align with my values. What are my values? And who agrees with me? Are there small businesses in my town that I can support instead of a big, massive corporation? Are there local banks and credit unions that will do business with me instead of doing business with Wells Fargo and Chase and banks like that, Bank of America? You need to start supporting people who believe in your values. And if you have these values and you're interested in starting a business, then people need to start starting their, you know, they need to get engaged in business and starting their own business and finding customers that agree with them as well. They need to buy local, and including food when possible, and break away from this system and send a signal, be very vocal about it to these large corporations of why they're making these decisions. And why they're not banking with them anymore, and why they're not buying from companies that don't support their values, and make it very clear to them that this is, they're not gonna come back unless corporations change their behavior and unless they start acting in a responsible way. If everyone who actually believes the things that you believe and that I believe started doing this, corporations out of fear would get the message, mm-hmm. and they would change their behavior. I really, truly do believe that. And I know from firsthand experience, I've been involved with people, you know, like Glenn Beck and others who are very influential. And we've had large corporations, large banks, large financial institutions reach out to us just from talking about these kinds of problems and trying to get us, convince us, to, you know, to stop talking about them because they're worried about people bailing on them. So I do think that it starts with people moving in a more local way, mm-hmm. becoming more community focused, and not just being totally dependent on whatever the cheapest option is. There's a reason why those options are cheap. It's because of cronyism and in a lot of cases because of globalization and taking advantage of workers overseas who are willing to work for less than a living wage. And those are not things that we should be supporting as people who believe in individual liberty.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And that's the best case scenario, that they volunteer. Some people don't have the choice overseas to work for these corporations. And we're perpetuating it by our choices. And, you know, if we're going to be moral, ethical humans, then we need to put our money where our mouth is, too. One thing I've learned in the last few years is that it doesn't matter what label gets slapped on people, because I think fundamentally we all want the same thing. Those are those who are going to listen to the media and want it having taken care of for them versus the people who I think are waking up daily to, we're going in the wrong direction. Doesn't matter what particular label that we want to put our people put on us, but we just want to be free and to be free to educate ourselves, our children, to have our jobs, to have them be safe and be paid a proper rate that's commensurate with what you do. It seems to me that they're trying to make the service industry into the only avenue for people, because everything else is being removed as a way to be employed gainfully. You know, so the $15 an hour wage, for example, it sounds good in theory, but is it? Is it really good for the economy? Do the people actually bring home more money, or in the next tax bracket, and so they actually get more money removed from their paycheck, right? So is it a way to capture everything that we do, everything that we think, so that we can go into that credit, that emotional credit score that they're trying to put people in?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The fact of the matter is that if you want to be wealthy, I mean, if you really want to be wealthy, you want to build a life for yourself, the best way to do that is to have a society where you have opportunities to not just become educated, but to pursue whatever your passion is in life. If you want to start a business because you want to have a barbershop or something like that, and that's what you're interested in doing, or a small restaurant or whatever it is, you know, making it easy for those people to start their own businesses and to be entrepreneurs and to go out into the world and to innovate and not just become cogs in a wheel. Mm-hmm. But the system we have today is designed to make that very difficult and very expensive for people. Try starting a restaurant in New York City. It costs a fortune to do that, to get the permits and everything else, to navigate the legal system. That, you know, it's extremely difficult to do these kinds of things today. It's because we have a regulatory system that is designed to benefit big corporations and big financial institutions, and it's not designed to empower the little guy. And that's part of the problem. We need to create a system that benefits that favors small business owners, that makes it easier for people to go out and pursue their passion and find that thing that they really want to do, not just to become cogs in a wheel. And you will have upward social mobility, mm-hmm, when you have a system like that. In fact, some of the greatest economic growth we've ever had in the United States occurred in the early 1900s, when there were very few regulations, when we had lots of immigration come to the United States, and you had lots and lots of new businesses, new ideas floating around, people who had spoke different languages and came from different environments, providing a totally unique perspective on the world and on the country. And that's what we need to have. We need another renaissance like we had at that point in time. And that can't happen when you have regulatory capture and corporations designing the rules so that only super wealthy billionaires can afford to navigate the tax system and create new businesses.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But is it by design, right? If this is a grid control system where you don't want outliers and you want everybody to just go willingly into this, I don't know, conveyor belt, then this is perfect for that system. You don't have people who want or even think that they can open up their own. You don't have customers who are willing to think outside the box instead of using the easy, you know, the easy button here. But it's not better. We're getting worse service. We're getting worse products. We're getting sicker. We're paying more for the, you know, the privilege of this. And I just read in the Economic Forum that they're stating that in 2030, no one will own property. This is the direction that they're trying to take us to. You won't own anything. You won't live anywhere that you want to be in, and you'll like it. And I want to live in a 500 square dark box. I don't want to do that. But that's where we're moving to, while we're, I think this whole rhetoric is designed to distract, to divide, and by definition, to conquer. We have time, yeah, to change that. And I think we, people like-minded, I don't care left, right, and in between, need to join together. And, you know, I take another point to your argument. We don't have to wait for them to let us do something. Do it. Get out there, grow your own food, bring your own business home, you know, be a renegade, because that's how this is going to break, not continuing the same thing, expecting a different result, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely vital that people take that attitude. If you're waiting for permission from you know, these big institutions to encourage you to stop, you know, buying from Amazon and to stop shopping at Walmart and to, you know, go out and create your own small, like, that's never going to happen. They don't want you to do that. The whole system is designed for you to continue to increasingly rely more on those structures. You have to be, as you said, a renegade and go out there and be an innovator, be unique and find your passion and find like-minded people. And I think I think if people actually took that advice seriously, I think we could all do better at it, myself included. I think the world would be a lot better place. I think the country would be a lot freer. I think people would be a lot happier. And yeah, maybe we wouldn't have quite as much cheap stuff made from, you know, borderline slaves in places like China. Maybe that's true. But I think that we would be a better society overall.
I couldn't have said it better. And I think that's a great place to stop. So in the minutes that we have left, how can people find your work, get your book once again?
Sure. Yeah, they can find my work at places like The Hill and Newsweek and FoxNews.com and on YouTube as well. We've got a great show called Justin and Donald Save America. They could check that out. It's new and it's really fantastic. We go into a lot of these different ideas. .org. And they'll be able to find all of our information, all the work that myself and other people at the Socialism Research Center have been working on.
Well, you know, I want to thank you so much, Mr. Haskins. It's nice to talk to like-minded people. And, you know, we're not alone. I'm convinced of that. But as long as we continue to sound the bell, that there's other ways to think about things and that you don't have to be a victim in any way, no matter what you look like or where you come from, I think that's how we win in the end, and we will. I'm convinced of it.
As am I. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I greatly enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you so much, and God bless. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.